Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves. We're all in on this journey, and we will span the globe to find out what is working and who has the answers. This is the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. Here are your hosts, Darren McCarthy and Brian Powers.
Welcome, Susie Harder. Great to have you here on the podcast. Susie, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Yes. So it's good to be here with you guys. Thank you. So I, clinically speaking, I'm a speech language pathologist, and I focus on working with kids who stutter. So I work with children ages 2 all the way up through high school, college, into adulthood. And then I'm also a mom of a 3 and a 6-year-old. So I get to do a lot of fun chase around the house moments, lots of fort building, hide and seek, a lot of meltdowns, and then a lot of professional work where I really get to analyze all the things that happen at home and step outside of the mom moments and think, you know, let me apply what I actually know. And I bet I have a plan for that, that I would never have thought of in the moment, but now taking a step back, let's try this tonight. So yeah, I get a good balance of those.
Sure. You have another toolbox to bring to the table.
Very many tools. I don't know how many visuals I've done for my kids over the years. And I sometimes come across pictures of them. And, you know, it's kind of like this distant memory of this behavior chart that I made for my 2-year-old son when he was at school. And he wasn't a biter, but he went through a phase of taking his flip-flop off and hitting kids with it, just kind of tapping them during circle time. And so it was this little behavior chart of no flip-flop tapping on your friends and kind of like, here's all the smiley faces if you get this period of time, and here's what you're going to earn. And he loved trucks. So it was kind of like, we'll go stand outside and watch the trucks for 5 minutes if your whole day. And I know you guys have so many great topics on behavior, and which, by the way, every single topic of your show that I came across was fabulous. It was, as I was sorting through, I thought, you know, as a clinician and as a parent, I don't know which one I want to listen to first. There is such good content that you guys have.
Well, that's the interesting thing, because like a lot of our guests have been moms typically who, yeah, kind of like you, they got creative in the moment to kind of overcome something. And then it became this thing that almost took over their lives. You know, it's like a Zen path. It's like, you were here, this is what you thought you were going to do, and this is what's really going to happen, you know?
Absolutely.
And it makes for great stories.
Yeah. And I think it makes for better ideas than what you would come up with when you're sitting and very analytically thinking about the best way to handle something, that when you're in the moment, you know, kind of how to blend those things. And the things that come out are often not the things you would think of as you're just kind of putting all of your knowledge together. Yeah. But they do end up being really fabulous ideas.
Yes.
Yeah. Like the anti-flip-flop plan.
Yeah, you know, the limited number of taps per flip-flop per day. I think it was it Emily that you had on last? That was a school psychologist or a psychologist that did, she was talking about the rationale kind of, you know, when we're having kids work towards something, that it's something that's meaningful, and that, you know, it's not often a sticker, it's something that's directly connected. And that was something that over, I don't know, the last 3-4 years was one of my takeaways as a mom, was kind of like, it needs to always be so relevant. So if we're trying to transition upstairs for bath, it's not about a sticker, it's about, you know, we have these little Crayola bath drops that are the colors. Yeah. And my kids would work the last 15, 20 minutes of the day when that was their meltdown period, so they could pick a color drop. And that transition upstairs, it was like, oh gosh, you know, I really hope your legs can work. That way you can get your color drop.
Wow.
Hey, mom, my legs definitely work. They definitely work. I mean, you know, it's like these little trinkets throughout the day that, you know, when people will say, well, what do you have your kids work for? But, well, what are we working? What are you in the middle of doing? And then those are the things, you know, is that.
Well, it's interesting because you, like, I think as a professional and as a parent, like the hat, you always wear the hat. Like you don't just take off your speech path hat because you're mom. Right. You know, I don't take off my educator hat and, you know, put on dad hat, you know, although they look different. But ultimately, we have to be adaptable. And there's so many coachable, like teachable moments where it's like, oh, I did this. And if I could step, like you said, step back from it, be a little bit objective. Okay, what did I just do? And now you can use that same strategy with your students or the student strategy with your kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's gold, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just that ability to analyze. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, you said it well. It's just, and not having to overthink it. Like it can be the simplest thing of, you know, hey, you get to pick the color of the water, what we put in the bath. That's my problem. I tend to think it has to be on a grander scale. No, it's just a matter of filling their, you know, let me make the decision bucket.
Right. Because we wouldn't work for a color job, but a three-year-old thinks that that's the best thing ever. Or, you know, heaven forbid, if I let my daughter pick it and my son was really going to, you know, if I was like, I'm going to let her pick pink. That would be the end of it.
I think parents, you know, if they have an IEP, it's one of those places where they know what a speech path does.
Yes.
Right. But I think oftentimes we kind of put a stigma on, well, a speech path just works on, you know, articulation, mm-hmm. You know, and we want to generalize it and make it simplify it as a parent. But you had a very specialized kind of approach. How did you get into working with stuttering students? And
yeah, what a great question. And I think you're right. There's a general, just with most fields, you know, that kind of this concept of a speech pathologist works on R's and S's. And mm-hmm. So whenever I meet someone, they'll say, oh, the Wabbit, you know, and it's kind of like, oh, yeah. And you don't necessarily get a master's in Wabbits. You get a master's in learning about child development and about how to promote communication at all the different stages within child development. And so my area under stuttering was really driven by a mentor that I met in Chicago. She was one of my professors in grad school, Kristen Camilla, and she grew up as a person who stuttered and then became a specialist. And her clinic that I did some of my internships and then later worked with when I lived in Chicago, her approach was so holistic and kind of, let me help this family. Let me look at this parent structure, the child, let me look at all of it and then help in whatever way I can, because for stuttering, not that any of those things cause stuttering, but if we're able to tackle some of those little pieces, it does help facilitate our progress. And so it is worth our time to know what are the dynamics between parent and child. And if there's, I know you talk about, you know, kind of the my response is yelling versus this, that's going to change the fluency pattern for that child in that moment. So not only are we looking at, of course, it's wonderful to have strategies as a parent to manage those. And now they have this extra value for parents that are navigating that journey with a child who stutters. So, you know, and we talk a lot about transitions because those types of things for kids can really throw them. And it's so interesting thinking about just the term. And that's one of the things my mentor always focused on was the transition points during your day. And it's a concept that really, when you break it down, can mean a thousand different things. But when I think about it, it's that change between activities and how present I am and what I'm intentionally doing to successfully transition between things. And so for kids and parents, that might be leaving in the morning, that, you know, just that act of getting out the door. And when we look at, you know, kind of that same thing of taking a step back and really looking at it, are we facilitating the healthiest and most successful transition into our day? Does it feel rushed? Do I feel like I'm stressed and then I don't have as much patience as what I would like to, but really I'm blaming it on my son because he's not getting his shoes on. And if he would just get his shoes on, then we'd be able to go. And if I have that tension in my voice, that is an automatic sign that that transition is not happening as easily as it could be. And so, you know, when we think about how we're transitioning a child into their school day, that's a really important thing. That if I'm looking at, you know, my son is wonderful in so many ways, and his body is so sensory seeking and so sensory avoiding all at the same time. And so his sock seams, and I mean, it is meltdown city in the morning if his sock isn't on right. And you know, you think, okay, well, if we have two ways to transition him to school, one would be we build in that time. So now he puts his socks on at night so he can get used to them, which would drive me nuts, but that was his plan. You know, I'm six, here's my plan. I can't handle it in the morning. It's too much for me. And then I cry all the way to school, and then I'm starting my school day sobbing. Or what is the plan and how are we going to offset that? And we need, you know, it's kind of like us parents, we get to be the timekeeper, right? So we get to kind of set the pace for what those transitions look like. And so if that's, you know, distance learning pickup isn't the same as what it used to be, but just the idea of allowing time. So if you're picking up your child, go to your favorite bench and that's your tradition. You have 2 minutes that you sit and ask about their day. And is it important what you ask and what you talk about? Not really, but you're present and you're not yet transitioning into that next thing where it's kind of like, oh yeah, yeah, great, okay. And now I'm facing the road. I'm already busy. I'm already unavailable, right? Mm. You know, there's cars, I'm this. How was your day, honey? It was just kind of such an empty response. So
I think those transition pieces are neat. Like you brought there, like I think parents forget that you're adding, when you verbalize in a moment of transition like that, the what you say and how you say it and the volume and everything else can either contribute to the problem, right, and cause the escalation, or you can de-escalate it by kind of backing off and having the right tone, right? You know, and we always talk about, you know, you're going down to the child's level, right? But it's not just physically going down. It's like, take it down a notch, right?
You're 100%. I mean, I almost want to say we have the similar mornings, because when you said sock issues, my 4-year-old daughter, almost five, same. And it's almost, I feel like we're in an NBA game and the clock is clicking downward in the morning as we go out the door. And there are mornings we're going out the door like the Tasmanian devil. And there are other mornings we're kind of like meandering out. It's very, you know, relaxing. But at those mornings, there's no incidents of my shoes are bothering me, my socks are bothering me. You know, it happened with the 9-year-old too, but it's just amazing. Like, you're 100% right. You don't think that way, but you have to really put that to the forefront of, hey, I got to give myself time to give them time.
To give them time. And yeah. What a great way to say it too. Yeah. You're exactly right. And the term that you were talking about, Darren, so I name that, or when I reference it, is vocal regulation. And so when we think about a child being regulated in a situation, that we can use our voice and how we're using our voice to really help regulate. So I sometimes jokingly, when I'm explaining it to parents, say, you know, even though you're not feeling your Zen moment, your voice is sounding like yoga mom. So if you walked into my house most times, probably 95% of the time, when we're in that kind of chaos moment, what you would hear would be, Hudson, we're out of minutes. There are no more minutes. Your body needs to be in the car. I'm walking out to the car. Hmm. What I'm feeling inside is not the Zen moment, but you're right that's how we bring them in. And so we know the power of pausing when we're talking to kids, and that it doesn't mean that we're talking slowly, but that we're really intentionally putting pauses in. And that we're using that regulation to kind of show, let's de-escalate, like you said, and that way we can move forward in a more successful way instead of, you know, kind of a forced way. Like, I can always force you to get in the car. Also, that's not my goal.
Correct. That should be nobody's goal.
We had, thinking of, you know, the motivators we had for a while, that whoever was in the car first with a pleasant attitude could pick the song on the way to school. And it was so interesting, you know, those little things.
Competition.
Or even just if you're in the car before time, with a pleasant attitude, ready to start your day, then let's listen to two songs, because now we have time to listen to two, because everyone's all right.
Or it's the, you know, we use here, and I bet you can't, or I bet you can't get all the toys off the ground before the alarm goes off, or, you know, it's not, yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, it's kind of rethinking things and reshaping them so that it works and it doesn't explode.
How does having your background and all the auditory piece and the auditory system kind of impact your the environment that you set for your little ones?
So a couple of things come to mind, and that's a really, I don't think that's something that people ask. And I love that question because it is so true that how a speech pathologist sets up their communication situations at home is so intentional, yet really without consciously doing it. So we really don't have screens. My kids don't play on tablets. They don't play on phones. They get one show in the morning, one at night, and they play. They truly play with real people and real objects. So then when I sit down to play with them, it's invited and it's fun because I'm adding to it. I'm not taking the screen from them to have a conversation. And I think there's something really neat about that. You can at any point join in and have fun without it being perceived as taking something away. You know, in terms of auditory, I think I'm really purposeful in being sequential about things. So, you know, first we're going to do this and then we're going to do this and presenting it in a really organized way. My son, when he was 3, would wake up and he was an early riser. So it'd be 5:30 and he'd roll down the hall. Mom, first I'm going to go downstairs and I'm going to get the cereal and then I'm going to do this. And then, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, he is such the son of a speech pathologist.
I mean, that's like you said, the transition, language is part of the transition. One of my mentor was always big on language, right? Everything that she was an educational therapist by training, but she taught for 55 years and she was a reading specialist and she had a background in music. So all of these things kind of combined. When she taught handwriting, for example, it wasn't just, you know, up, you know, make an S or whatever. It was up, around, circle, and back. And, you know, and everything that she does has a language to it. And now there's coming out with more and more studies that are connecting, you know, your long-term holding on to information to the language that you use. But I think some, you know, it's that balance. Like you said, it's like using too much language gets you lost in the moment. Now I'm in fight or flight versus not enough language. Now I don't know. I don't have enough direction to do what I got to do. So it's fascinating, you know.
And I do
I'm always really interested in talking to speech paths because you guys have a different perspective on, you know, things.
We do. you know, and I think my focus in that same way of language, and I'd absolutely agree. And I think the word I use all the time is communication, and just that same, the same purpose of it, right? That how we're using what it is we know to communicate something. And so writing is only as good as what it's communicating. And, you know, speech is only as good as if it's understood or if you're saying it in a way that is understood. And so, you know, when we talk to kids about being effective communicators, like my mentor always uses that term, and it just always resonates that is what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure that these children have all the tools they need to be an effective communicator. And I would honestly say that the kids that I work with, so most of the time if children are referred to me for stuttering related concerns in early childhood, we're able to move through that and they don't continue to be a child who stutters. It's just there's some really great early intervention available if you're with a really good specialized person. And then later on, if a child's referred to me, say in elementary school, middle school, high school, there is still so much power in teaching a child about communication and the feelings that happen if something is stuck or if something isn't as easy as you want it to be. The first response is to pull back. And so you kind of need that communication coach or that conversation coach to validate, you know, what you're saying is important. And if you pull back, that's an option. Also, they're not going to know what your idea was.
Right. Yeah. So we're seeing more and more parents that are speaking on behalf of the child. So you're you know, and it's like, and they talk, some of these parents talk a lot, right? So you're filling in your void, my void, and everybody else's void. It's like, you know.
Well, so one of the terms we use often is talking turns, and it's usually an early childhood term, not necessarily for parents, but it is so fun to navigate that dynamic when a parent is having extended talking turns, and we're kind of looking at the balance. And, you know, and the Hannon program in language development for early childhood really looks at, I think the program's called It Takes Two to Talk, but it's this perfect balance of, if one person's talking too much, then it's not balanced, right? And so one of their resources looks at your communication style as a parent, and it, you know, are you the quiz person? You know, what's this? What's this color? What's this called? Are you the narrator? You know, it's kind of on the couch. Oh, look at you building that farm. That's so great. Are you, you know, kind of which person are you? And that the ideal one is the tuned in parent. And that is someone where there's this balance of, you're providing your observations about what's happening, but it's not always coming from questions. Oftentimes it's coming from your observation about what's happening. You can ask questions, but that it's not, you know, that's not a balance. If I'm only asking you questions and you're only answering things. So yeah, when we're sitting and playing,
it's one of the things. It's like the DISC assessment for parenting.
What is the DISC assessment?
The DISC assessment to get your personality and see what kind of communicator you are. Yeah, it's amazing. I want to take it for myself. I can tend to guess which one I would fall into, but.
I often have to kind of coach parents through it to look at, you know, really, because we do so much based out of books, you know, we'll sit and we start with, how do you use a book to create a conversation? And at any age, but to sit and to use that, you're not necessarily reading it verbatim, but you're looking at it and you're talking about it. And, you know, it's not this long. If it's a three-year-old, obviously you're not going into this complex analysis of each page because they would not be interested in that. So you gauge, but I really have to suggest and model to parents how to make those observations and to not fill in the blanks. So if I am looking and I'm saying, you know, it looks like he's packing his bag, that naturally then elicits that child to communicate something. I don't have to say, what's he putting in his bag? Where is he going? Why do you think he's packing it? You know, and then it can be much more balanced.
Yeah. And I think some, like, I heard it was actually an OT that was speaking, and they were talking about, you know, a talkative person is in essence stim, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're actually stimulating their own auditory system. Auditory. So it's like people put it together with behavior. And that was, to me, was like earth shattering. I was like, really? Like, that's why they just keep talking. I got somebody in my family, they're just the loudest person in the world, you know? And yes. And you want it, the more you say, you know, keep it down, the more they just get louder.
Right. Cause that's not a replacement behavior. And when you look at, you know, just the behavioral aspect, I need to give you something to replace that input. I can't tell you don't want that input. Right. So my funny story kind of along those lines. So my son's 6 now, but I think this is maybe when he was closer to 3, but he'd sit at the island for breakfast and he'd do this drumming motion and he'd just hit his spoon on the corner of the island, and my husband, it would just drive him nuts. Like, it was the breakdown of our morning was this spoon drumming session that happened. And so, you know, but I was looking at it thinking, oh my gosh, he's getting auditory stimulation, and here's a kiddo who won't stop talking, and I need that break, and he doesn't ever give me that break. And so one of the days, you know, my husband is saying, gosh, it's so much work to be around him, it is nonstop. And then he looked at me and he goes, oh my gosh, this is what I do to you all the time. He gets it from me. This is what it's like to live with me. Oh my gosh. Because he's just, you know, and half the time I'm kind of like, are you talking to me? No. Okay. Well, okay.
That's a hard thing to grasp, because it's like, there's a difference between listening and hearing, right? Mm-hmm. And so just because if somebody's not understanding us, turning up the volume is not going to answer. It's like the foreign language, right? How many Americans do you see floating through France screaming their heads off? You know, like, but conceptually, I think we have to be a little bit more empathic, you know, with people and their listening and their language, right? I mean, is that what you notice in your career?
Yeah, and I feel like everyone needs to know an OT, because OTs are just such a phenomenal resource for understanding the rationale behind why kids are doing certain things. And oftentimes it presents as behavior or something that just feels, in a very simple sense, annoying. And we want to tell them to not do it. And there's a really fabulous OT book. I'll get you the name of it if we want to put it in the show notes, but it's a breakdown of here's the behavior. It's kind of like a half page on each thing. Here's the behavior that I see. Here's the actual clinical description of why they're doing it. And here's a bullet point list of things to do in response.
The Out-of-Sync Child?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. So I ordered it, and at the time, my son would only wear rain boots. And for as much as he's a very normal, sweet child, but you know, he's a lot of work to parent. But he would only wear rain boots all the time. In Fresno, it gets 110 in the summer. Rain boots. All the time. It would drive my husband nuts. And so there was this whole, you know, again, speaking of transitions in the morning, this kind of like showdown that I walked into of, you're going to wear regular shoes. No, I'm not. I'm going to wear my rain boots. And so I had just ironically ordered the Out-of-Sync Child, and it showed up later that night. And I turned the very first, it's the first or second page. It says, your child only wants to wear rain boots. Here's the clinical rationale. And then the first thing it says, let him wear the rain boots. And Brian looked at it like, I feel like you just went and wrote this book today, right, because this is so specifically accurate to our situation this morning. And again, you're right. Like, I'm not trying to be right, but I am trying to make sure we're understanding his body. And it feels frustrating when we don't. Yeah. Like our family pictures are always an absolute wreck because he has to wear clothes that don't feel like he wants them to. And so this last time we have a lot of really great pictures of my daughter.
Not all kids are, they say, is language based. Like your son can say to you, hey, I'm going to wear my rain boots. That's the deal. Right. This is what it is. Other children can't express that, right?
Right. And if you're looking at that, kind of that early childhood period of 2 to 4 and what that expressive language looks like, what the vocab looks like for that specific profile in that child, absolutely. I mean, when I think of all of the things that are already hard at that age as a child and as a parent, just navigating that whole stage, and then you add the complexity of this communication breakdown of, I have something to say and I'm not being heard, and the parent kind of being like, well, I can't really tell what you're saying, and I'm just going to tell you the way that it is in our house. Uh-huh. But then there really isn't, you know, kind of a grounding force there. So you get a lot of frustration on both sides.
The parent thinks there is a grounding force, and I always say that from experience. But yes, you're 100% right. It's like, you know, go back to this morning, and it's cold here in New York still. So, you know, I don't want to wear the jacket. I want to wear the sweatshirt. And it's like, now we're at a point where it's like, you go out and experience the cold and then tell me if you're going to wear the jacket or not.
Oh my gosh.
I'm such
a fan of natural consequence decisions and just the ability to create opportunities for that independent decision-making is so phenomenal. One of the principal superintendents that I was working with and talking to last week was talking about with distance learning, how little children get to have the opportunity for independent decision-making right now. And I thought, what an interesting take on, we know that everything is so different, but even if they're doing a version, you know, a hybrid, you know, where they are on campus some of the day, a lot of time they're being judged and supervised by their parents, which are micromanaging everything they're doing, right? Like, don't sit like that. Don't make that sound. Come on, you know more, you know. And you think about, you know, this child at school would be able to function and do all of these independent things during the day. And then here they are in the context of their own house. I mean, how would we feel, you know, in that situation you know, I'm at my office and if I want to do blank and just kind of put on a song, I can. But if I were home, they're like, I thought you said you were working. I hear you listening to music. You know, my first response wouldn't be, thanks, that's so helpful that you're helping me monitor that. My first response is,
ugh. I heard that expression was like, even a diamond has flaws under a microscope, right?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good point.
So I want to talk about Junior Authors Program.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, there's concept. So much fun stuff happening. So I think that this project really stemmed from needing to feel connected to kids again after this whole period of COVID. And that's really what I thrive on in my job, is I get to have my time with my kids. And then in a private practice setting and in the school setting, have this really rewarding, wonderful one-on-one time with kids and have these great conversations. And then it just feels different during distance learning, right? And teletherapy, yeah. That you don't get that same rewarding feeling at the end of the day. So the things that were work, that were balanced out, are just now work, and it just doesn't feel the same. Mm-hmm. So Labor Day weekend, and so this last fall, so time of recording, what would be about 6-7 months ago. So I'm from the mountain community, Sierra National Forest, so close to Yosemite National Forest, or yep. Close to Yosemite, and grew up in the mountains. So the mountain community that is right there. There was a fire that started, and when you live in the mountains, you're somewhat desensitized to wildfires because they're not totally uncommon, right? So you obviously don't want a fire close to you, but your firefighters are so well trained. No one knew what was about to happen and how it was going to spread and kind of how the wind was going to. So the destruction of it was absolutely massive. And so sometimes I describe, like, my Facebook feed wasn't, oh, we evacuated. It was, our house is gone. And it just threw me into this whole, oh my gosh, I don't even know. These are all people that I know. They grew up, they're raising kids just like me in this community. I live about 45 minutes from there right now. And so it was really kind of this idea of, what can I do that would help support kids? Because I guarantee their parents are doing the best they can right now, and they're just trying to survive. So what can we do to really help these kids process this journey, to feel supported? And so as a speech path, my solution is always like books, right? So I was Googling, is there a really sweet and wonderful story that has to do with, whether it's fire-based or not, but just kind of that has to do with home and that sense of home and processing the loss of a home, and then really, kind of focusing on the big picture, but not in a, kind of lectury way, just something really sweet. And I couldn't find anything, and I was looking for handouts. And so anyhow, the long and short of it is that most of the destruction happened on Tuesday, right after Labor Day, and Wednesday morning before my kids got up, I wrote a book. And then I was kind of like, well, I don't know how to publish a book, so now I need to figure that part out. So as I was looking into, and in that first week, I mean, it was just gung-ho, just adrenaline. I call it adrenaline-induced heroism, right? Like, I don't know how this is going to help, but I'm just going to go all in. And if it helps in some way, I'm in. I don't even know. Let's just go for it.
Just go with the flow, yeah.
Just go. Yeah. And, not have a sense of perfection. I jokingly say I'm a recovered perfectionist, because my tendency is not to just go. But, so it'd be so easy to say, I have an idea, but let me wait and get all the pieces together. And instead, there's no time for that. Let's just dive in and go. And so in that first week, I had my editor, I had posted internationally for my illustrator. I was like, this is not going to look self-published. It's going to look phenomenal. It will be a solid storyline. I work with books all the time. I have a really good sense of what we need to put in this book. And then a few weeks later, and it was actually one of my son's distance learning meltdowns that led me to the realization that, it's not just those kids, but also, who else is not doing well? All kids and all parents. We were just fighting to get every packet done, every writing prompt. And he's in kindergarten. It's, it's one sentence. And it was the death of our family for that, 2 months period. So my routine at that point was get up, go work out, cry in the car, then go home, start distance learning, do distance learning with my son, have my three-year-old running around in the background trying to get her to not be so loud and not be three, because that's totally appropriate that she would be doing all the things she'd normally be doing, but I'm telling her not to now. Mm-hmm. And then at lunchtime, my husband and I would switch and I'd go to work, and then I'd work till 10 and then I'd come home and do it again. So I think I was just kind of primed for like, something needs to change. There needs to be some sort of outlet somewhere. And my son was just, you know, the packet situation. And then all of a sudden he went toward, you know what, mom, all I want today, I promise this will come back around, but all I want today is a lemonade stand. We need to do that right now. And I was kind of like, okay, we've never done a lemonade stand before. That's awesome. I love the idea. Also, you have 5 minutes left of your mid-morning break and then you're back at school. We don't have any lemons or lemonade. So right now is probably not the best time to get this set up before you start back. I think it's a great idea though. So let's figure out a good time for it. No, right now it has to be. I was kind of like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Again, this like kind of unrational side or irrational, so where I'm kind of like, gosh, this is just okay. So the end of that was at lunch, we went out on the corner. He made his own store. We did not have anything like lemonade, but he sold his granola bars and Otter Pops and Hot Wheels. And my daughter sold used crayons for 1 cent. And we called it the corner store because we live on the corner. They spent 3 hours designing their sign. And where I'm headed with all of this is kind of in the process of, you know, we're now 2 weeks into the book and I'm watching him spend so much time and doing all of his letters and spelling and math, and he's calculating, you know, how much everything should be. And then if he does like a packet of three, how much that would be to give him a little bit off, and then what change he needs. And, you know, this whole thing is just kind of like taking a step back. We know better. We know that kids need this to be relevant in some way, and they need to be inspired by something. Otherwise it's just work. And so of course he does not want to do the packet, but I guarantee if I gave him that same writing prompt and it had to do with his corner store or something he cared about, great, no big deal. So that weekend I developed a voting based platform and a website and then launched on Monday. And we have kids all over the world that are voting to help make a book. And it's been so fun. Wow. So they get to weigh in on the characters and the setting and things that go into the pictures and all the illustration-based pieces that build the story. And right now, you know, there's different votes up all the time, but right now at time of recording, it's the cover. So they're voting on the cover and which color for the, which font color for the title, and, you know, just really being involved in the whole process. And we do behind the scenes videos and, you know, just kind of give them full access to what happens to make a book. And the literacy piece behind it has just been phenomenal, because I mean, even within those first couple of weeks, my son, who was not doing any packets, that next week was holding up pieces of paper and he was writing on the front, it said OOTHR. I was kind of like, is he calling himself an author? I have never seen him use that word before. He started writing books and calling himself an author. And so through all of this has been this, you know, kind of bigger than that, this community positivity project is kind of what it turned into, of supporting kids as they're traveling the journey of losing a home. So all the proceeds, I mean, 100% of the proceeds, everything goes back to the kids who lost homes. We have our book signing event coming up next month that I'm so excited about, because my whole vision from the beginning was I want kids to be the forefront of all of it. I want them to feel good about the contributions they're doing. I want them to open up that book and have this bond with a book and kind of like, oh my gosh, I voted for that llama dog toy to go in that picture. I can't believe the taco dog toy didn't make it. You know, but to have this relationship with, and see behind the scenes for all of it. So the book signing, all of the featured junior authors, those are the children who unfortunately lost their home, but they're being celebrated in this way. They have, we call it it's like a corridor. So they each have their own booth and they have a display board that has their headshot and they're about the author and the newspaper article they're featured in and their artwork that's due at the book. And so you go through and like get everyone's signature on the parts that were meaningful to them. A lot of them submitted artwork. So it's like hashtag Mountain Strong. So they, you know, put that and we put it in the wall of the back of the, you know, scene. And so there's just a lot of Easter eggs throughout that are all really deeply meaningful.
But that ownership piece, I feel like once you like discover, like you did with your son, it can really grow and flourish very, very quickly.
It is unbelievable the things that kids are sending me, because they want to express that, you know, and it's been a hard year for everyone. And so just being able to have that outlet, and this last week we had opened it up to, you know, anyone who wants to submit art that look, you know, kind of falls in this category to be considered. And the artwork that came back was unbelievable. And then, you know, when we're asking kids to weigh in on things, I mean, they're really taking time to be, you know, good contributors. And, you know, and then there's this underlying kind of message of voting doesn't take a lot of time, but you do have to be informed. You have to look at your choices and then vote. And there's this kind of ongoing thing. And we have little stickers that say, my class voted. And so I do, you know, live Zoom votes with a lot of the classrooms, or we've done school-wide ones. So the principal and I will host a school-wide live Zoom vote. And so then they get to meet the author and we talk about things. And I ask him, do you want to help me publish this book? And here's the decisions we're making right now. Will you weigh in with me? And, you know, I jokingly usually ask him, has anyone ever published a book? Like, me neither. I haven't. Have you ever had an author call you and ask your opinion about what should go on the cover? Me neither. You know, so I think it's just fun to be really transparent, and, you know, I'm learning a lot. And so, you know, there's the beauty in it's not perfect. And this is, you know, wonderful because it's done for the right reasons, not because it's, you know, going to be perfect. It's, you know, we're learning.
Yep. So if someone's interested in kind of participating in the process, what's the website and all that good stuff?
Yeah. So juniorauthorsprogram.com has all the information, and we have our book signing event that's coming up for the kids, and we have some other events happening. The book will hit on Amazon, hopefully. So the plan is Earth Day. So we're celebrating reforestation for our local forest. And so there's the tie there. So it's called Where's My House is the book. So that will be available on Amazon. And then we have a lot of neat pieces that are coming together. And the kids right away had said, can we make more books? So I figured out a way to do it. So we have a tentative plan for how it will all work. So starting in the fall, we will do, for schools that are participating, a book in the fall and a book in the spring. And it's all collaboratively. We're all doing it together, one big project. And then at the end, when the book is created, the schools get the book at cost and then use it as a fundraiser for their school to support whatever cause is meaningful to them and potentially associated with the book. So if it's an awareness-based topic, or if it's just a silly topic, then that's fun too. And then they can use it. But the three pillars are vote, publish, give of junior authors. So it's this idea of you're going to weigh in and feel heard. And then we're going to make that matter. We're going to put that out. We're going to share that message. And then you either, you know, when I'm zooming in with the classrooms, I just say, when you have a project, you can decide, is this going to help people or not? I'm like, we want to help people. Okay. Yeah. Then let's use this to help people. It's as simple as that. And there was a third grade classroom last week that in the chat, it blew up. I love helping people. Me too. This is the best day ever. Like, oh, gosh, if we're able to show kids that their voice matters, we get to show them the behind the scenes of making a book and to help them be interested in books in a different way versus pushing literacy, but saying, you know, how interesting is it that most children's books, paper, you know, that have paper, not board books, have 32 pages. Do you know why? Mm-hmm. Because there's 8 long pages at the printing press and they each have 4 sides. So that will just be 32 pages. Like, you're not ever going to have a 34 page book. And that's just kind of like, what? And so they go and look at, you know, like you have to have a different ISBN number for a paperback versus a hardcover. Go check it out. You know, and it's really fun seeing that interaction with books in a different way. And so if we have, you know, all of that plus then this kind of young philanthropy based idea of let's do a project that helps people. And then let's put you in charge of it. And so the schools that are doing it, what I'm showing them how to do is how to do the junior authors kind of book signing. So it'd be at the open house or school carnival where their kids would be out there with a booth signing books. And the top secret version that is coming out, it hasn't even been really announced yet. But I'll still say it.
Come on, give us some juicy.
That all of the junior authors books starting in the fall, they're going to be this, they will have space for kids to write the text. So we will be building the story from an illustration-based standpoint and the concept of it. Yeah. And then they have a carved out place. And so I picture kids writing stories from different perspectives. You know, they could write it from whichever character they want, or, but they could also write it and give it to, say, a grandparent. And it's kind of like this very just special moment in time, this keepsake of, this is me as a 6-year-old telling this story, and I'm an author. So on the author page, we have about the author, and they write their name and age. Mm-hmm. And then it's an affirmation-based thing. This junior author is being known for, and then there's like a little box of, you know, like, patient, open-minded, you know, all of these things.
Very cool.
And then that's there about the author. So just a lot of those types of things coming into it, which has been fun.
Wow. I'm not sure how you find all this time with it. I guess you have good roller skates in your house.
A great husband.
And strong coffee in California.
That's what it is.
It's been a lot. It's been a lot. And, you know, I think any of the projects that we decide to work on independently, there will never be time for it. But if it's really driven by this very intense cause of, I need to do this to help blank. Yeah. You know, one of the local newspapers had reached out about doing a story. I'm like, no one needs a story about me. I don't care about me. But could we highlight all these kids? And so each week between when the book started or whenever that was, and when the book's released, we highlight and we feature a set of kids as our junior authors of the week. And so then we set it up and interview them and highlight them. And it's just been so much fun.
That's awesome.
And so time consuming, but you know, lots of just one-on-one conversations. And like I showed you guys the playhouse, you know, we always, there's this theme of rebuilding. Mm-hmm. Obviously with what's going on with the fire and really trying to make it something that kids can be involved in some capacity. And so I always ask, you know, what is that crazy rebuild thing? If you know, your parents would probably say no, but you know, so last week it was a catacorn shaped pool filled with balls, like a ball pit. This week was a teal salon chair because I like doing people's hair. And gymnastics equipment. Yeah, I mean, it's just like such sweet, wonderful things. One of the kids said a tunnel to go between his room and the kitchen. And then I said, oh, well, would you have kind of like some race cars down there? Or how would you get back and forth? And he's like, yeah, race cars. And then, you know, probably we would have, and the three things he said just right tip of tongue were Gatorade, puppies, and hummus. It's like, that is the best combination of things I've ever heard. That could just solve a lot of things right there. Give people Gatorade, puppies, and hummus.
But I don't know. I mean, that concept of letting the kids do the rebuilding could be some really crazy HDTV.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, right.
Well, okay. So then you're going deep into the back behind the scenes. So I have a plan for really helping kids be actively involved in something super cool. It needs to get approval first, but that's exactly where my mind went to is, you know, let's, instead of acting, would be the best way to say it. A lot of the supports that I'm seeing right now are waiting for things to go wrong before they make things better. Yeah. And the proactive approach is obviously not that. Sure. And so what is it that we can do that actively involves and inspires these children in a time that is really hard? Because talking, you know, counseling-based service is amazing. And there's still another component that we need to add. And so that active kind of piece of, let's build something together and let's use all your imagination. Let's, you know, let's bring all of that and then see it come to life. So the dream playhouse that I was, that I told you guys about briefly, because I posted a GoFundMe for them, you know, when they had this beautiful sketch and it had a zip line and, you know, rock wall and swings and just this cool structure. The very first donation was $10 and they were ecstatic. And mom was kind of like, this is the happiest I've seen my girls since the fire. You know, it's just this idea of, let me imagine, let me just go there. And it doesn't need to be realistic and real, but just let me live in a happy place and let's create something. And I think all of us know, I kind of jokingly say the blah to aha of, if it feels blah, like you need to find your aha, because once you're in your aha, things just naturally happen and you're much more motivated. When you're in the blah, it just stays blah.
Did you just title our podcast?
Yeah, there you go.
Can we say you said it here first? Can we get it?
Said it here first. I have not said that to anyone.
Okay.
It's done.
So that's actually, so the character in our book, and oh my gosh, you guys have to see the cover because the dog's eyes are just the sweet. It's really, the characters are so well done. So I'm so excited for that part. But in the book, she has this journal that she carries with her and it's called Notes to Self. And so then at the end, it's left open so that it's not preachy in the text, but it's right. Just kind of like some notes to self. And so you'll see when you see it, kind of what is related to what we just talked about that's in there in her notes to self.
Oh, cool. Nice. That's exciting. Well,
yeah. And you can tell you're super passionate about this and that is awesome. I know you were going to create kind of a unique URL. So we're juniorauthorsprogram.com/soundfoundations, right?
Yep.
Awesome.
And so I'll link some of the, you know what I'll do is I'll put together a welcome packet of some fun activities for kids. So any parents that are listening can jump on right. And just download. There'll be some really, you know, they're all things that are just based on our characters, coloring pages, activity pages, some word search things, some writing prompts, just some great kind of build out activities that really take the message of what we're doing and connect it with something that's literacy based and academically rooted.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.